All right. Welcome, everybody, to another REI Vault Tuesday weekly team huddle call. Today is Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015. Welcome to the call. Excited to have you. And for some of you that are fairly new, we do these calls weekly, unless Chris and I are traveling. It is really an open Q&A call. You can talk about any topic that you would like. If it's a deal related, real estate related, or frankly, even if it's technical around Podio, we don't really limit the questions. So don't be shy. We usually cover some updates at the beginning of the call. If you want, if you have a specific question, you can press *5, and that just notifies us that you raised your hand, and then we'll bring you into the call. And we'll also open up at some point, if there's no more questions that are being asked, we'll just open up the phone line and unmute everybody. And again, press *5. Make this as interactive. These calls can be incredibly productive, but it really comes down to the questions. So ask away. You know, if you're fairly new, don't be shy. And if you have a question, you probably have three or four other people that have the same question. So we're here to help. And as normal, if you ever have a technical question in nature, you want to change your marketing budget or zip codes or something with the VAs, whatever it is, just email support@salesteamlive.com. That goes into a system so we never lose the emails. And Chris and I do see those emails, but we've got a large staff managing, and we're trying to be as responsive as possible. We always ask everybody to give us 24 hours. We're trying to answer within 24 minutes. That is our goal. And if you ever have a specific question related to a real estate deal, you always email dealhelp@reivault.com. Those get escalated to Chris and myself and a few others so that we can expedite and answer your questions. And then always make sure, if it's related to a deal, copy the link of the Podio website URL and be as specific as possible in any of your communication so we can answer you quickly. So with that, Chris, any updates?
I don't have any updates. I just had two quick things I wanted to mention. One is about the mastermind, and the other question, the other comment was about just a particular ongoing with a deal that we have that I wanted to share with everybody. You know, just about the mastermind, just a general thing that that popped up is that, yeah, we can all generate leads, but you know, a lot of people are struggling. We're struggling with the follow-up process, right? So everybody can generate leads. Everybody, you know, they can send, you know, some of the guys there, they know how to send out a bunch of mail, but many of them had the pain point of just everything kind of slowing down, right, with regards to their ability to handle all the leads and process them and have an effective method to be able to do that. Many of them, you know, we're lucky in the fact, and everybody here, that we have Podio, we have a lot of things set up in order to facilitate not only the lead intake, but then the follow-up process. And that was a real pain point in quite a few people that we met at the meeting this past week, and many of them expressed interest in coming on board with us, and we're having dialogues with them. But, you know, it's definitely a combination of, yeah, we got to generate the leads, but that's only the beginning, you know, converting them and following up and using the pre-sales that we have and being on top of the leads is a completely different next phase, and one which it's not done properly, then, you know, you're not going to optimize what you got on the table. So that was a comment. I don't know if you want to touch on that before I move on to the second item I was going to mention.
No, I would agree with you. I would say the common theme that I heard at the Collective Genius, where people are really focused, and this is a total off-market, and that is the MLS. It's harder to find deals on the MLS. It's harder to find deals that are HUD deals, and the consensus amongst the group, the people that are making the most money, are really pushing towards direct mail. And the direct mail is all about the follow-up. That was a huge topic about sending out offers and following up with people, that most of the deals are coming after, you know, multiple interactions. It's kind of like the idea that postcards get people, you have two marketing lists. You got the list of people that you're trying to get them to raise their hand and get onto, you know, off a postcard to come into the system. And then the second list is the continuously following up with those people, sending out offers, putting a cash offer in front of them, you know, followed by a few phone calls, followed by some follow-up letters. And a lot of people in that group did not have that completely wired. And the ones that did were making a lot of money. So that was interesting. The second is, that we heard over and over again is hiring a really good acquisition manager. A lot of the people that are doing real well have a acquisition manager that's talking, you know, working the leads, from start to finish. And the recruiting, hiring, and properly training the acquisition manager was a big deal. And so the people that are doing real well, I just got the phone this morning, Chris. I'll announce it to everybody, but I was talking with Jason and Andy. They came from the Collective Genius. They've been averaging 100 deals a year. They did 100 deals last year. They're a large wholesaler, so they wholesale a lot of properties. They're in Utah, and they work a couple of different markets, but they're on track to do 150 deals this year. And they did their first mailing with us, and they ended up knocking down 7 deals. They did about $5,000 worth of mailing, 7 deals. They've got under contract. One they actually closed and made, Jason said they made $15,500. And the second deal is a really nice one. They're going to probably net $60,000, which is awesome. And they said they're estimating $120,000 in net profit. Actually gross profit, off of the 7 deals. And Jason said it really comes down to, they've got a really, really strong sales rep who is on the phone with the sellers. He said they're totally inundated. They can't believe how well the marketing. They were concerned. I recorded the call, so I'll probably post it at some point, Chris. Maybe I'd like to start recording these and post it on our training site. But they said it came. They were very concerned with the aggressive nature of the postcard marketing, and that was kind of a they were going to test it and see how it worked, and they said that after doing it, they are convinced. They do get some angry calls. I believe they call them back too, but they're converting nicely. And it comes down to, I will also tell you that Jason and Andy, right before the call, you know, they've been on this program for 2 months, and they just added another market. They're actually going to be working in 3 markets, but they just added a second market. But they are the number one pusher of pre-sale offers. They've actually in 2 months they've already.
I didn't know that.
They mailed out 104 pre-sale offers, and you know they're working the best practice. Jason said, you know they're early, so these pre-sales are really, you know, kind of just hitting the tip of the iceberg. But I told him that if he's done 7 deals off of, you know, the initial marketing, I would expect another 14 to 17 deals off of just working those, you know, sending out offers, following up, and at least one phone call per month. So anyway, I'm not sure if Jason's on the call, but if he is, Jason, I'll have you interact. In fact, Jason, if you're on the call right now, I'm not sure if you are, but press *5. I'd love to bring you in on this, but at some point. Jason's the operational manager, so Andy actually is the CEO. He's been in the business for 13 years. Jason, I think he said he's been in the business for, 9 years. And Jason runs operations, and super good guy. At some point, I'll bring him in on one of these calls just to interact and talk about how he runs his team. Anything else, Chris? I got a couple other updates.
You know, the only thing I was going to make a comment about is just recently, you know, we had that deal down in Miami that has turned a little troublesome. And it's interesting because, you know, the thing that we are struggling with on this particular deal is tenants. I was just going to make a general comment about tenants. You know, many times we can overcome tenant issues. But on this particular deal, we have a situation, and I just want to make the point of distinction between this and the deal that we had done recently where you did an eviction in California. In the deal that we have right now, the tenants are not paying rent. They're not providing access to the property, which is a similar situation that we had in California to a certain extent. But the differential between this one and the one in California, which we were able to do successfully, was that this one, the owner does not want to do an eviction. So whereas in California, the owner was willing to cooperate with us and kind of take the necessary steps to do the eviction, then on this one here, when, you know, the owner doesn't want to do the eviction. So it almost feels like, you know, if you got a situation where the tenants are not paying you rent, they're not providing access, and the owner doesn't want to do an eviction or even cooperate with that, then that's a tough one. So I just want to share that because most of the time we can overcome most things, but it seems like if those three things, so on this deal, we're going to talk to the seller and say, hey, you know, unless this situation is not going to go away. And so we're trying to convince him to try to see if we can get him to do an eviction. Because one of the issues is that if the buyer closes on the property, but yet the tenant was put in there by the previous owner, and if the paperwork isn't done properly, then that can cause a problem with the new buyer trying to evict the old tenant because they contractually never really got them into the property to begin with in the first place. So just wanted to make a comment about that.
Hey, Chris, I know we're doing this on the fly because I haven't, I wasn't privy to that particular call with Steve, but I was having the same dialogue with our attorney who helped on the eviction for this California deal that we did.
Right.
And the attorney actually said that, California is always the tenant, and friendly state, right? Probably over any state in the country. And he said that it's actually pretty easy. If there's a transfer of property, it's actually pretty easy to get the tenant out by the new buyer. And part of it has to do with like bank foreclosures. If a bank forecloses or there's a foreclosure, the new owner has to have the ability of doing the eviction. And he said, that's not a big deal. So I think there's an opportunity to get a discount, substantial discount from the seller. If the tenant,
that's what Steve is going to try to do.
Yeah, and see if the buyer is interested in what price the buyer would be interested in taking the property with the tenant, and take the discount and say, hey, we're gonna basically have prepaid rent. Give them a $5,000 prepaid rent for 6 months, and if they can get the buyer out sooner, then they get to keep the difference.
Right.
So that's what I would do. Chico, before we jump, I see that I think it's Max. Or Max's team in Sacramento has a question, but I think we should also share the story of this the deal that we're going to lose, that we got under contract, and then the daughter got involved, and we recorded the memorandum. You want to go through that? And I think this would be a good exercise for everybody. In fact, I'll explain it real well. We got a deal under contract. We actually worked quite hard. I shouldn't say quite hard, but it was over a number of months with this particular seller. And we had it under contract. We actually had a buyer. We are getting close to closing. The daughter got involved and talked to a neighbor, and they wanted a higher price, and they just pulled the plug. We recorded a memorandum on public record to Cloud Title, which is what we sometimes do. And anyway, Chris and I were in Tampa last week, and Chris gets an email from an attorney, and the attorney basically said that we needed to sign an affidavit and release our memorandum. And there were a number of points on there. Chris, you want to share it? And then you looked at me and asked me my recommendation, and my answer was real quick, right? So why don't you share?
You said let it go. I mean, there's you want me to explain detail by detail, just in general.
Yeah, just in general. Chris asked me what to do. Go ahead.
Yeah, I asked Gary what to do. The attorney said, basically it was a nice written letter from an attorney, and basically said, either you're going to go away or we're going to, have a little dance. And I looked at Gary, and I wanted to go one way, but I asked you, Gary, and you said, just let it go. And letting it go for a couple of different reasons. Number one is, I always look at the domino effect. If we try to fight this guy, then it's just, there's a chain of events, time and effort and energy that goes into that. And in the end, is the outcome going to be the same? Are we prepared? Because I think when any situation like this, if you're going to fight it, I think you have to make a decision to fight it all the way, not partially. Because I've been on the experience of a long time ago, I was sued for something related to real estate, and then I won the first battle. But I didn't really keep in mind that they were willing, the other party was willing to take it further. And when they tried to take it further, I knew my attorney bill was going to continue to increase, and I folded. So I would have just folded initially if I would have really considered that. And so for time, energy, and just everything else, we just decided to let it go. And it was interesting because there was a wholesaler involved, and we asked him, hey, in your experience, what's your experience with when you filed a memorandum of interest recently? And he said, typically, if he files it, and then the seller will come back to him and say, okay, fine, let's work it out, let's do it. However, though, anytime an attorney gets involved, it's like, okay, you know what, that's the end of it. And so I guess the seller had somebody who knew that was an attorney, and we got this letter. And so for us, we filed a memorandum of interest. If the owner would have come to us and said, you know what, I'll sell it to you, let's work it out, we would have done that. However, the minute they got an attorney, then at that point it gets a little dicey, and so we just thought not to pursue it. So we had to send a letter to the attorney, release a deposit, but then we filed something in the public records. We have to refile something else, which Steve is going to do, in a form and everything else. So it was a bit of time and effort on all sides. And so I think the lesson learned is that if the inkling is that that seller is really going to fight it through, then I would have not even filed it to begin with, because we used a lot of time and energy and effort just to get that thing filed to begin with, much less now everything to unravel it. So anyway, those are my thoughts. I don't know if that's what you're...
It is. It is. It's like I always run a high-integrity business. I always like to work in the light. I don't like to work on the fringes. And if they, you do your best, and some deals you win and some deals you lose. And I don't... Personally, there's always a better deal. There's always a better deal. And it's like, there's an attorney involved. The seller really wants to get out. They had to spend some money to get an attorney to write a letter. And it's like, let's move on. There's plenty of other fish in the pond. And, and then I like the idea of not, I've only had one lawsuit, from a seller, and it was a deal where I had to sue the seller. And I won. And out of all the deals I've done, and that's a whole bunch, and it's always good to get letters of recommendation and testimonials. I recommend that to everybody, by the way. Every deal you ever close, you should always get a testimonial from the seller. You should get a picture of the property, and you should get a nice statement. You could even write it on their behalf and ask them if they would either give you the testimonial or sign it. And possibly referrals, and you want to keep that, and you should, over time, we could put all that stuff on your pre-sale letter so you can customize it. We've got Brad on the East Coast. Those guys have done over 1,500 rehabs over the last 4 or 5 years, and they're a huge buying machine, and they have a lot of testimonials, and we customized a pre-sale that's branded for them. And so get testimonials, and then, it just helps you sell more. You don't want a lot of negative press. You don't want something in the paper or something that, somebody, is angry with you. So let's see. What other stuff do I have? A couple of last updates, and then let's get to Max, because I see Max raised his hand. The pre-sale letters. So the pre-sale package, most of you are aware of this, but we are using a 9x12 envelope. We were originally using a 6x9, which is the size of taking a regular piece of paper and folding it in half and sticking in an envelope. We've actually changed it, and we're doing a 9x12, so it looks like a FedEx package, and it's more expensive for us, so there's no increased cost for anybody. But it's $1.40 in postage, so there's a big increase, but we have been seeing a really nice increase on conversions in our market off of that. And the other thing is we were fulfilling those once a week. We're now fulfilling those 3 days a week. Typically Monday and Wednesday and Friday are the days that we're able to mail those because of our volume. And eventually, once we have more people in our group, more people in the REI Vault group across the country, our goal is to get us delivering pre-sale letters every day, which means every day we have some mailers. So right now, you know, there might be a 1 or 2 day delay for those going out in the mail. The last update before we open this up, there's a bunch of you. I'm not sure if you're even aware that we can do this, but we have a number of members in our group that have their own marketing list. They have a probate list, or they have an eviction list, or they have a divorce list. If you want, our group can actually do the mailing for you. And we've got yellow letters, and we've got postcards, we've got all kinds of stuff. We've got certain formulas that we know work best for the type of list that you have. And if you want us to do the fulfillment for those and manage it, all you have to do is email your list to support@salesteamlive.com. And even if you've got custom marketing pieces that you want to have fulfilled, or if you want us to do the management of everything, but you've got your own mail house that you like using, doesn't have to just be mailed through us. We can still manage it. All you have to do is email support@salesteamlive.com and tell them the type of campaign, the type of list and the type of campaign that you want to launch, and attach the list that you have. And there'll be some interaction back and forth with the team, and then they can launch and manage that for you. So I request not to go crazy. We don't want, like, if you got 20 different lists, that becomes, there'll be some increased cost on that. But we have been doing that as a service because we're good at it. That team can actually do the mailing. So a lot of people are taking advantage of that. You can just email support@salesteamlive.com, and they can take care of that for you. All right, Chris, that's it. You want to open it up? Bring, I think we got
Matt. I'm not at the, are you on the line? Can you open it up?
I am. And here we go. I'm going to bring here. Select. All right. 916, you are live.
Hi, hello. This is Valerie in Sacramento. How are you?
Valerie, how are you?
Good, thank you. Earlier, you mentioned the 104 pre-sale offers that were mailed out. Were they mailed initially or after the postcard campaign?
They go after the postcard. So the postcards go out. The sellers call. They leave a voicemail. Mm-hmm. You get on the – they come into Podio. They get transcribed. Mm-hmm. And then you jump on the phone and you call the seller. You have the call with the seller.
Okay.
All right. Usually you're sending out a pre-sale to the unmotivated seller, somebody that wants a
mm-hmm.
higher price. Let's say they call and they say, yeah, I'd take $1 million for my house, and you offer them $250,000. And they basically say, well, I'd never take that type of price. What we're doing is we're actually sending them the formal pre-sale because they're the lukewarm sellers. If the seller over the phone says, yes, I will take your offer, then you know what to do. You're going to probably get their email address or go get in your car and get the contract signed. But if they're the lukewarm sellers, then we're working those leads. And what we're finding is that the sellers, they, you know, it's kind of a no seller left behind concept, which is most of your deals are going to come from a seller that's unmotivated, that over a fairly short period of time is going to become motivated. And we do that by sending them a pre-sale offer, and then, you know, 4 weeks later we send a follow-up letter, and then 60 days later, you know, 60 days another follow-up letter, and 90 days. And then you should also be calling them as well. And to there's training on our member site. You can go to reivault.com/pre-sale. I suggest you do that. It walks you through everything. And you and Max, I know you work with Max. I got an email from Max yesterday, and I told him, I'm like, you know, he's like, most of these sellers aren't very motivated. I'm like, yeah, you need to be sending pre-sale letters to them. I got a message from Zeke Martinez. Okay, Zeke is in San Antonio. These guys have a fairly large operation, and they've got a fairly weak sales team. And Zeke would be the first to tell you. I told him last week that he needed to do some serious work with the sales team. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
But anyway, Zeke was closing six deals a month, on average, and then it dropped to 2 deals a month. And he was talking to me a couple weeks ago, and we generated him like 2,600 leads. And I went through and looked at the leads with Zeke, and I said, Zeke, have you looked at any of the leads? I'm like, your team is not even talking to these people. Here's a lead that came in 3 weeks ago, and it said, tried to call the seller, didn't answer. And that was 3 weeks ago. I'm like, what kind of sales team is that? Are they order takers or are they salespeople, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I showed Zeke how to get the pre-sale letters, and I got a message from him a couple of days ago. He said, you know what? I got 2 deals off of the pre-sale. So it does work. You know, the average should be 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 7 if you're actually calling them too. But those are the numbers you should track to. All of your warm sellers. There's a lot of training on our site on how to do this.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, we're about 5-6 weeks old in this. And so we're sending out pre-sell letters, some pre-sell letters to the unmotivated ones, and we'll keep touching bases with them. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, who's got the next question? Press *5. *5. Otherwise, we'll open it up to everybody, and we'll start picking on people. All right, 604. 604, you are live, Canada.
Gary, what's up? It's Justin.
Hey, Justin. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm good. I have noticed something that has changed inside of Podio, and I don't know if this is on purpose or by accident, and other people might feel differently, but are you guys aware that when we do a pre-sale package and we click the pre-sale button, Podio is automatically changing the status of that lead to follow-up?
It's been like that for 4 months.
So it's always been like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and it was basically just to simplify the effort. The idea is leads come in, the VAs change the status to ready to make offer, call for more information, right? Both of those are really viable, which means the seller put up their hand and said, hey, I'm willing to talk to you. All right. So the idea is, you know, you don't leave them in that status. You work those, and then you move them either to remove from the list or dead or send offer, whatever. So really it's like once you talk to them, they really should go into the next bucket, and that next bucket is follow-up, right? If you sent them a pre-sell letter or you've sent them a follow-up letter, they really should be in your follow-up bucket. And so that's the way it works. You probably just didn't notice that, Justin.
The thing is that I change all of those lead status, and again, this could just be a personal thing for me, and you might tell me that I'm alone on an island, but for me personally, it's more logical to have them be changed to contract sent, which is what I was changing them to manually, and then I guess what's been happening is like there's a few second delay to where it changes the status, but to me, follow-up means I got to follow up with so-and-so, and contract sent means we've gotten them to that point in the process where we sent them a contract. So I don't know if it's something that can be easily turned on or off inside our account. It doesn't need to be a big deal. It's just more of a question/comment.
Super, super, super easy to change. All you would have to do, I don't recommend it. I think the contract sent would be where you've like physically, because a pre-sale is marketing. You're still marketing to them. It's not like they've given you a verbal acceptance, right? So if you've actually sent a contract, which means they've pretty much given you a verbal, those are the ones that I would put as a contract sent. For you, everyone is going to be a little different. So all you'd have to do is send an email to support@salesteamlive.com and ask for that change and just be real specific. Just be real specific and allow the team 24 hours, but they'll probably do it really fast.
Okay,
so,
thanks.
Absolutely, they can do that. Awesome. What else, Justin? Anything else?
No, that's it. I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Let's see. Who else? Next, who's got a question? Press *5. Don't be shy. All right. Here we go again.
is, I think, Valerie. I am going to bring you on. Valerie, you're live. 916.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so another question. So some of the sellers that we're speaking to are saying that they're getting, say, four of the same postcards in a month's time, and they're not necessarily from us. Is there a way that you guys know that there's not, like, duplication from other investors?
Yes. Yes.
Sending to the same market?
I'll give you the answer. So Max actually sent me an email on that. I responded to him. There is nobody else that we're marketing to in your market in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's for sure. Number two is, and I was actually just chatting with Jason in Utah on this. So he said one of the interesting things he's finding is the sellers are not getting marketed to. A high
mm-hmm.
percentage of the sellers that we're marketing to you, marketing for you, should not be getting a lot of marketing, but some of them will. So, you know, I would, if you're interacting with those sellers, I would also, you know, ask if you got a good relationship with a seller, I would ask them to maybe
mm-hmm.
save the mail so you can actually see it. But
yeah, it's probably from another investor.
Yeah, it's definitely another investor, and some people are now ripping off our stuff. We're starting to see Chris actually, he opened up his mailbox, and he's starting to notice in South Florida some people are copying our stuff. The good news is that means
right.
it works, right? but,
exactly.
You know, you got some people that may be blanketing the entire area. That happens a lot.
Right.
Like, there's a guy in Arizona. He sends out 80,000 postcards a month. Big player. They got a multi-million-dollar business, and they're
mm-hmm.
sending some of our stuff out. So, you know, on their own,
awesome.
They just basically copied the postcard and off they went. But I wouldn't really worry about it. I think the biggest thing is your cost per deal, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, if you're interacting with the seller, I would ask them. But you know, you got to also think about the credit card companies. Like if we open up the mail, the number one thing we all get are those credit card things. Hey, I've got to sign up for the
right.
free credit card. And I open
mm-hmm.
up those credit card things, and it's like, this is the stupidest marketing I've ever seen, right? But why have they been doing it for years? They spend billions of dollars. The number one marketer are credit card companies, and it's because it works. So. You know,
I'll make a quick comment to that, Gary. Can you guys hear me?
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah, the comment I was going to make is also we had a discussion about this in our mastermind group is that sometimes, like for example, seller. Let's just use an example that the seller. I'm just using this as an example. Let's say that the seller got five cards this week and they're all the same, right? The interesting thing is that then. If there's five investors, right, at every stage of the game, many drop off. In other words, the question is, you know, in other words, if you're up against, let's just hypothetically up with these FIB's investors, number one is many of them, it's just a one-time deal. Many of them, some of the ones that they're sending out mail really don't know what they're doing. Moving on to the next phase would be, that let's say you were to speak with a seller and then send the pre-sale package. If you're not able to come to terms on the deal, but if you send them a pre-sale package, now that moves you along, you know, kind of along the continuum, meaning that now the seller has something different from you than everybody else who has just sent them a postcard. And so it's interesting that, you know, yes, in any market, you're going to have a certain number of postcards that the seller is receiving. And then that's just the first step. In other words, you got to continue to take them, you know, to the next level, which is the pre-sale, and then your follow-up obviously
yes.
has an impact. So all those things, because that's one of the items of discussion that came up, is that someone had asked about that, and the kind of the collective answer to everyone was, yeah, you know, we may have the appearance that there's a lot of competition, but really who are we competing when a lot of these guys really don't have a follow-up process in place or not sending them anything else in the postcard or really don't know what they're doing because they got a course. Maybe they swipe the postcard and send it out. And in the end, you know, you may have a lot less competition than what the initial appearance might be of that. I hope I explained that properly, or I hope it made sense.
Oh, yes.
The way
Thank
I explained
you.
It.
Thank you very much.
No, no problem.
All right. Star 5, if you have a question. I'm going to go ahead, Chris, and open it up.
Okay.
I'm going to unmute the line. Here's 334. I'll take this one here. Might be a shorter call. Okay, Dave, I am going to Dave, you're live, 334.
How are you today?
Good, man. Welcome.
Good, let me get out of the wind here a little bit. I'm outside. I'm going to get out of the wind. I have a question. I'm researching a completely new market area. Can you give us just a couple pointers if we were going into an area that's out of our normal farm area, what to look for?
You know, you want me to answer that? Gary?
You are the master, either. Chico. You're the master.
Well,
virtual wholesaling, dude. So I'll let you go first.
You know, I always say there's a couple of different things, right? So I have to write these down as I talk to you, just because there's budget, right? There is activity, right? There is non-disclosure versus disclosure. There is also available resources. I'm just writing these down so that way I can come back to each of them. Available resources, and then there's finally counts, right? So a budget. I'll go through these really quickly, and then maybe you can come back and tell me which one of these maybe we can dig through, or maybe tell me about kind of where you're struggling. But you know, the budget, you know, every market is different, right? So you know, if you're in a market or you're looking at a market in California versus somewhere in the central U.S., then, you know, obviously California is going to require a bigger budget than, say, somewhere down in, you know, in in Ohio, for example. I just, you know, because it just came out of my just thought of it. So, you know, for example, whereas in California you might have to drop $5,000 a month. If you drop $5,000 a month in Ohio, you're going to get, you know, your phone's going to blow up, and you're not even going to have the ability to, unless you have two or three people on your staff, you can't even handle all the calls. So budget is a consideration. I wrote something down as number two, but I can't read it, so I'm going to go to number three, non-disclosure versus disclosure. So, you know, that's important because, you know, if you look at any non-disclosure state, is going to require you to go out and be able to get MLS access. So, you know, St. Louis, Missouri, for example, is a non-disclosure state, which means that then unless you have MLS access, you're going to find it difficult in order to get comps for that market. And so if you're going into a market that you don't have the availability of getting, you know, of getting MLS, then that market would be a problematic market for you. Available resources. So, you know, I always ask people is, you know, do you have any contacts or do you know people in that particular market that could kind of be your feet on the ground, so to speak, or give you some sort of market intelligence. If you've never been in that market, know nothing of it, then if you were going, deciding between two or three markets and, you know, you knew some people in a variety of different markets that you thought could do stuff for you or could help you and assist you in any way, then that would have a bearing on that. I can't read the second thing I wrote. That's really bad handwriting.
Activity.
Oh, look at that. You wrote it for me. You know, activity comes down to costs, right? And also the counts of data, but as well as the type of property. So as an example, in certain markets, and like, for example, there's different markets, right? So there's cash flow markets and there's fix and flip markets, right? So in California, a lot of the deals are fix and flip because they're really not, the numbers are never going to pan out for somebody to buy that and make a positive ROI. So any deal you look at is going to be priced so that somebody buys it, puts work into it, fixes it up, and resells it. Other markets are more cash flow because, you know, you really, and within those cash flow markets, though, you have pockets. You have different, you have a market that may have two different avenues, may have the lower end of the spectrum, which is a cash flow deal, and or you might have certain parts of that market which are bit of a higher price point, more properties where somebody would actually live inside if they, you know, somebody that had good credit and could afford a down payment, they would want to live there. So even if you decide in the market that does have a cash flow component, then you want to further kind of do analysis, and we could do that kind of analysis in order to determine, okay, we got this market and this 30 zip codes, can we figure out, you know, where are the cash flow deals, which tend to be like really low on the price point, which is versus where are the deals that are higher up in the price point that would indicate that somebody would buy it and then fix it up and then resell it to an end buyer. Generally also speaking would be like if you have a lower end market where say that the properties, you're having to buy properties at $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 and then wholesaling them out because, and then, you know, the end price is still going to be relatively low in the 50s or 60s, that's going to be a market that's going to be tough to make, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 assignment fees just because the prices don't really, it's tough to be able to make a $10,000 or $7,000 or $8,000 assignment fee on a house you buy for $10,000, you know, or right, somewhere in the teens. And so then you have to take that in consideration. You might do more deals, but it's going to take you, it's going to take more volume to get the thing, you know, kind of income. And we have people on this call that, you know, do in California. They're spending a lot of money on marketing. They'll pick up a deal and they'll make $50,000 in a deal. But, you know, they have to put a lot of marketing money behind it. And then, you know, once you narrow it down, and let's say you come down to maybe a couple markets that you're considering, then we can run, you know, buyer counts and then they'll be able to come back to you and say, well, gee, here are the counts for the buyers and the average tax assessed value, average sales price, average square footage, and then try to come up with, hey, within that market, does it look like there's enough buyer activity, first of all, and then secondly, within that buyer activity, where does it look like might be the best places for us to try to target initially? So I guess I will come back to you, and I just gave you kind of a brain dump kind of on the fly. So I would come back to you and say, well, tell me specifically. I'm not sure if that helps in any way, and or what are some of the things you're struggling with in picking a market?
You've answered quite well what I was interested in. I am possibly looking at trying an out-of-state market, and I've got several that I'm looking at, and one of them being I've got a friend in California that would be interested in being my feet on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
We've had this discussion, and I think that there's a good chance that I'll bring him on at some level, and I could tell you the area he is at. Are you familiar with some of the smaller towns, not so Merced area?
I am. Yes.
Gary is. Yeah, I'm not too familiar with California.
Yeah, Merced and Fresno, I think both hot markets.
Right.
I'd be all over it. I think that's great. You should realize I would estimate a $3,000 a month marketing budget.
That was my other question. I'll further that discussion with you before we jump off into it.
Okay.
Yeah, if any input you want on that, we're more than happy to give you input on that and kind of try to guide you. You know, it's an inexact science. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of taking all those things into consideration and then taking your best guess, but we can certainly help in narrowing down the decision process so that, in the end, you know, there's no guarantee, but we can try to give the best chance for success out the door.
I'll tell you this, we have already started building a buyer's list, so it's going to kind of depend a little bit how that buyer's list goes, where we go from here, I think.
Okay.
So I thought if we could build a list of 10 or 15 buyers that are actually active buyers and they're doing, you know, one deal a month or five or six deals a year, then it's a lot of incentive to go out and see if we can find the product for that buyer.
Correct. It just depends on the area and type of product. What I would say is, you know, just as you're talking with the buyers, is also, you know, every buyer is different, you know, so as you're talking with them, you know, the salty guy, the old guys that have been doing, you know, deals for a long time, they're going to always want a much steeper price and they're going to have more stricter requirements versus a newer person that's just getting started or The other thing I would do is potentially, I would reach out. What I would do, I know you're trying to build a buyer's list to gather intelligence. The other thing that's really good for gathering intelligence is going on Craigslist, searching for handyman investor special, figuring out who is posting the most frequently on Craigslist. Typically, they're going to be wholesalers. And then reaching out to those wholesalers and saying, hey, you know, I'm looking to do some marketing. I don't have a buyer's list. If I do marketing and I have a deal, would you be open to help me sell it? And if so, what are the terms? And then along that conversation, you said, well, gee, give me an idea. Do you have just so I don't waste my time, any particular areas that you really would want some stuff in, any particular areas that you think don't waste your time there because I can never sell anything in those areas, any particular type of house and price point? And so, you know, they're great for gathering intelligence, and not that you wouldn't use them. I mean, you might talk to 10, you might talk to 5 wholesalers, and there might be a couple of them that you really gel with and you think, yeah, I could probably work with this guy. If I can't sell it myself, push comes to shove, I got to get somebody else involved, I'll get them involved. So it's not, you're not approaching them in a disingenuous way, but they're great for gathering intelligence, and many times they'll tell you quite a bit of information. So that's the other thing I would try and talk to as well, other wholesalers in that area.
That's good info. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Keep us posted.
Will do.
Awesome, Dave. Hey, while I have you, Dave, just a couple quick little notes. I would estimate $2,500 to $3,000 per deal. Initially, okay. And that number should probably go down as you start working the offer follow-up process. If it were me, I would do, I'd set an initial budget of $3,000 for a couple of months. I wouldn't do less. I wouldn't actually do anything in California. If you're doing it right, you should probably do a $5,000 a month budget. The ROI will be strong as you can, you know, you're gonna probably make $15,000 to $40,000 on a flip, but you just have to plan the numbers game. So
yeah, one thing I would comment on is I have been quite happy with the hang up text message process, and we've just been getting familiar with it. But I like the way it works.
Awesome.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we're working on more of that for buyers. Chris, you actually got the request for you writing the message to buyers, because I see a number of people are saying, hey, it'd be really cool for the buyer campaigns if we could text message saying, hey, just missed your message.
Okay.
What's a good time?
Yes, you know what? That's a great idea, actually.
Super easy. Super easy. Okay.
Yeah.
I am going to bring in, hold on momentarily, Chris, and I'm going to bring on, looks like we got 2 people. I'm going to start with Memphis, Tennessee, 901, you're live.
John in Memphis.
Hey, what's happening, John?
Hey,
John.
I was just going to say that you guys aren't the only one getting letters from attorneys either. One of the properties I had under contract here, I got a letter from an attorney last week basically wanting me to file a release of an affidavit.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of stinks, and that's, you know, it was one of the properties that I was kind of concerned about finding buyers, and then I called the seller to go show the property to somebody who sent me proof of funds. He was a serious buyer and obviously had cash lined up, and the seller tells me, oh, well, I've already signed a contract with another company and we're closing Friday, which was the Friday before last. But
okay.
I was hoping that if nothing else that I learned out of all this mess, that the affidavit had clouded the title, which it did, because I got a letter from their attorney last week, a very respectful letter from their attorney last week, asking me to file a release in the recorder's office.
Did they basically say that you didn't put down any consideration? Did they give you reason
why?
No,
that's not what it was. No, the reason why they said I should is they said the time frame for the extension had expired. And since in my mind, technically that might have been right because of the way the contract was written, I wasn't going to argue with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the learning lesson to me was make sure that, and now it's our policy that we will always have 90 days on the contract to close, even if we're closing next week, just to protect us.
In hindsight, was it a situation on this particular deal that you did not, it was a pricing issue? In other words, you were trying to sell it, but you weren't able to, and at the end, you finally got somebody, but by that time, it was late?
I had talked to Gary offline about this, and I did some of the things he did, and when I really started marketing for buyers, then, I mean, even now, I'm still getting requests for this property. It was a great deal, and that's why I thought it should go very fast. So
yeah.
I had that cash buyer, and if I didn't have him, it sounds like I would have like three or four more standing in line because of how many people have responded since then.
Mm.
So, I was going to take the cash buyer out to see the property, and the seller didn't want to show the property because he thought he was going to close like two Fridays ago, which, of course, he didn't. And he still hasn't closed because I just filed the release yesterday.
Right.
Win some, you lose some.
Yeah, and
I'm thinking.
I
hate losing. It's just always, if you're competitive and you were into competitive sports when you were young, you just hate losing, right? It's not just the money. It's just like you hate to lose. But it's just one of those things. And sometimes I might really try to enforce if you got to get an attorney involved, and you definitely don't want to go head to head. If an attorney ever comes to you, you really should always have an attorney, I think. Ask me why I know this. Way too much experience on the downside and making mistakes. But if you have an attorney write you a letter and you really wanted to fight it, you really do want to get an attorney.
I have two of them.
Yeah, I told Chris this is all contract law, so it's what's called offer and acceptance. So if an attorney does send you a letter and they give you time to respond, then if you respond and release, it's not like they can come after you for anything else. You could actually hold that up in court because they did make you an offer in writing, and if you did accept it, then you're done. But if you were to fight it of any sort, then you really should get an attorney because if an attorney's going up against you, they know in the court system they'll always win. But if there's another attorney that comes back, then there might be a fighting chance, or they'll just pay you off. Because as soon as an attorney gets involved and there's two attorneys, it's going to be, the seller is going to have to come up with at least $5,000 to $10,000 to get you to go away. They already know that, right? The retainer fee alone, writing a letter is a couple $100. But as soon as if you would have responded, the other attorney is going to probably say, hey, no problem, I'll take care of this, but I need $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 retainer to get started. And they may just say, hey, let's just cut him a check. A little bit of
the seller was being represented by the other wholesale company that was buying the property.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought so too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. I thought it was funny. Steve spoke with that attorney for the letter, and I just thought it was funny. So I said that Steve. I said, Steve signed it, but there were no two. To make it so short, I didn't think he signed it properly. So I said, just reach back to the attorney and just find out from him if this is okay before we go through the effort of sending it to him and everything else. And so Steve picked up the phone and called his attorney directly. And Steve said that the attorney said to Steve that the attorney realizes that we are attempting to rectify the situation, but that he wasn't going to, I just laughed because of the way he said it, he wasn't going to jam us all up. I guess that's attorney speak.
That's what the attorney said?
Yeah, he wasn't going to jam us all up.
I told Chris, we were sitting in the event when you showed me this letter, and I said, you're not going to have any problems from us. I'm like, how fast can you sign that thing and be done with it?
Yeah.
So it's all good. It's all good. All right, John, anything else? We're about at the end of the hour.
Yeah, I was just going to say the other thing that I thought was interesting, obviously the reason why he could go to another wholesaler is because he had gotten marketing from other wholesalers. Of course, I know I'm in a hot market. This is a very hot market in the United States. But apparently two or three other wholesalers had called him besides me at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, two other wholesalers had called him at the same time. Is that what you said?
I'm saying that at the same time that I sent out the original postcard, that during the course of me communicating with him and getting the agreement signed, several other wholesalers in my market had contacted him. And sometimes these people are not even in the Memphis market, and there's a big wholesaler in Ohio, and he markets here routinely. It's crazy.
Yeah. Guys, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to become even more competitive. It's just, this is the cycle that we're in. This is the same cycle that we saw the last cycle, which was this point was about 2007, 2008. So it's going to become more competitive, and we all have to adjust. That was one of the messages that Jason had for the group last week, which is there were a lot of people in there who have been making crazy amounts of money and not tracking anything. And Jason said, you know, these are days you got to get on your game. You got to be tight. You got to know your numbers. You got to be really planning for a change in our market, because real estate has always changed. And you know, it's going to become more competitive. We're also going to start seeing cash offers. We're going to be competing here in this market coming up over the next 12 to 24 months. We're going to be competing with a seller financing offer. So you're going to come in with $100,000 in cash, and somebody's going to beat you for $140,000 on terms. So we are going to have to adjust appropriately. And for those people that don't know how to make, seller financing deals, we're going to have to adjust. Chris and I are working on some of that right now, so we can share what we're doing and how we're adjusting. And that's why we should all, why we're all collaborating. And so with that, hey, Chris, looks like Marty, I know that you had your hand up. If it's a quick question, Marty, otherwise we'll have to hold it off for next week. I'm going to just bring Marty in here real quick just to see. I got to jump off the call. But, Marty, you're live. Is this a quick question?
Possibly. You know, I had sent out a pre-sell through an email because a seller I had seems to be traveling a lot. So the pre-sale was sent through an email. My question to you is, how do I get this guy now on the follow-ups? Does that make sense? In other words, I want to follow up with him with follow-up letters. Oh, but then I'm going to have the same issue. I'm talking to you. I'm going to have the same problem. In other words,
does he have a physical mailing address?
Yes, he does. He does, but for some reason I sent him a pre-sell and he never got it, and he told me, why don't you just email it to me?
I'll tell you what, create some tasks for yourself, okay? Just create some tasks for yourself for the next 3 to 4 months.
Right.
Every 3 to 4 weeks for a follow-up. And then send him a follow-up. You can actually copy some of the words. I would customize it a little bit if it's email. You know, it's like, dear, hi, Mark, I haven't spoken to you in a few weeks. So I just wanted to check in to see how you're doing and if you've had a chance to think more about the offer that I made. I'd love to buy your property, and, trying to make a decision on a couple properties that I'm going to buy in the next couple weeks. I'd love it, one of them to be yours if it makes sense. And, call me anytime. Here's my number, something like
that. You know what I liked about sending out an email is I was able to actually take the first page and throw my stationery on there. Is that something that we could do with the pre-sales, or it gets a little complicated?
So you can brand your pre-sale letter if you wanted. You can customize it. We have to set that up. I would just see how it's working. I would change very little, but primarily if you've got testimonials. Testimonials from sellers, that always works well. And we can do that. There's There's a little bit of a charge sometimes from the mail house. We'll have to look at it, but it'll go in the same pre-sale envelope with the same type of label, but the document will look a little bit different. And my recommendation is if you're doing higher volume, you know, like Brad just did this, Brad on the East Coast, but they're mailing 100, they'll do 100 to 300 of those a month. And
right.
I would just, we already know what works. So don't fix something that's not broken. You know what I mean? Brad, those guys have a very, very reputable brand on the East Coast. They've done a lot of rehabs. They do TV ads. And that's one of the reasons why they're customizing theirs. And we can definitely do that. We can customize it for you. I don't suggest it. I mean, Marty,
not
what
at
I would
this
do
point.
Is
yeah,
Marty, what I would do is, you know, I see the volume every day that's coming across. I literally look at every pre-sale that's going out just to, because we're kind of still QAing everything. But I don't see enough. You know, you should be doing 30 to 50 of those a month. That would be your number. In fact, everybody on this call should be doing at least 30 to 50 a month. Otherwise, you're not doing enough. And, you know, if you haven't had success on it, then take my word for it. Take huge amounts of blind faith, and when you actually start getting your first couple back, you'll be like, oh my gosh, this works, because it does work, and you know, just have to be consistent. And you know, if you had to do it on your own, you know, I've had to, you know, when we first launched this, we were, you know, I had my 11-year-old daughter printing them out and stuffing envelopes just so we could get it tested, and it takes a lot of work. So all you have to do is press a button in Podio, send pre-sale offer letter, and put a price, and the rest of it's done. I'd get them out. You know, if you only have to send out 10 to get a deal, then, you know, you should test that out and see if it works for yourself. But, anyways, did that help, Marty?
Yes, very much.
Awesome. All right, everybody. Great call. These calls are definitely productive when people are asking questions. So we love your questions, and we love all you guys and gals. And go do great things. Make lots of money. And we'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.